I'm Sam Post, and you're listening to The Music Post. In the first few episodes of this podcast, we dealt with some pretty weighty, challenging music in the art of fugue. So today I'm going to play for you some, well, less weighty music, I guess. But more importantly, these are the first pieces of music that I really fell in love with, and I'm hoping, as usual, to transmit some of that love to you. So for today, a couple of short pieces, also by Bach, from a set called The Inventions, that he wrote as teaching pieces for his eldest son, Wilhelm Friedman. And despite some of them being relatively simple pieces, pieces that today children often play, I think you'll hear they're immensely charming, really delightful, and have subtleties and intricacies all of their own. The point is, good music is good music, no matter what level of difficulty, though this message is often lost on the piano students of the world. So if you're out there, take this message to heart. And we'll use a couple of these short pieces as opportunities to compare how some Bach masters approach Bach's music on the piano more generally. Stay with me. Let's start by hearing one of these pieces. This is the first of the Bach inventions that I ever played. And a few days ago, I realized that I haven't performed this piece since I first learned it back when I was 7 or 8 years old. So here goes the Bach two-part invention number 8 in F major. This was really the first piece of music that grabbed me and compelled me to play it, to practice it, to learn it. And I had already been playing piano for quite some time, and I liked it okay, but like many children, I wasn't too focused, didn't practice all that much, and had some general issues. So I tracked down my teacher at the time, Lois Narvey, who is now the Director of Programs, Events, and Partnerships at Levine Music in Washington, D.C., and by track down, I mean walked into her office, since I also teach at Levine. So I asked her about playing this Bach piece for the first time, whether it made a difference for me, whether I responded and reacted to it.
Well, the specific memory I have was when I played my first Bach invention, actually.
Oh yeah.
I don't
have specific memories of it, but my memory of it is how much fun that was for me, mm-hmm. You know, because obviously that's the thing I love to work on the most.
And Lois herself is actually a harpsichord player, not a pianist, so music from this time period is her specialty.
And you clearly understood what this was about. You know, you seem to have sort of an innate thing.
And I remember...
I do remember loving this music, of course, but I'm still a little dubious that I could really play it decently at that age.
I don't know. Could I really play it?
Yeah, you could. The thing that you and I struggled with was the romantic option, which...
That is music from the late 1800s, as opposed to Bach, who was composing in the early 1700s. So you can see it wasn't all peachy for me, and I was really lucky to discover that I had this affinity for Bach's music in particular.
And with Bach, I could tell that you heard it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, hearing it is the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be actually to hear the two channels or three, or you actually have to, you know, you can't produce it if you can't hear it. And you heard it and you understood it. And then you're
so at that point, my father gave me this tape of the Bach inventions with Glenn Gould playing. And I mean, that was curtains. I must have listened to that tape 1,000 times, just over and over. And it's hard to imagine doing something like that today. But I guess a combination of not having much to do as a kid and I guess it was a different time, but, you know, I would just listen without doing anything else, without not reading or cleaning, just listening. Anyway, I hope I've piqued your interest about this music with my story, but now enough about me. Let's get to the music itself, which is the main course here, and then we'll hear from Glenn Gould a little bit, as well as a couple of other pianists. This music, similarly to the Art of Fugue pieces from earlier episodes, there's these different voices competing for your attention and trading back and forth these musical ideas. Only in this case, there's just two voices, so it's a little easier to keep track of things. The first of these gestures is these rising, bouncy eighth notes you heard at the beginning, organized into three beats and starting with this breath or empty beat on the first one. So one, two, three, one. And then after that, there's these groups of four falling 16th notes three times over. So one, and then again, two, and then again, three. And of course, while the soprano voice, the right-hand voice, is falling, the left-hand voice is rising with the bouncy eighth notes. And this interplay between the two, where they're opposing each other, going opposite directions, where they're moving in unison, moving together, is something to listen for throughout the piece. It's very important. Right where we left off, they switch roles, the left hand now falling with the quicker notes and the right hand rising. Switch again. Now here is the first time where they really come together. It's like there's this moment of agreement and stasis where they're standing still. But the right hand breaks off. Now this is one of my favorite moments. The right hand again takes over these falling notes, falling groups, but there's this little metric trick where I hear the right hand, instead of grouped into three beats, grouped into four beats. So like this, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. But in the left hand, meanwhile, definitely a group of three at the beginning, but after that, not entirely obvious or clear to me. One, two, three, one. So you have these groups of falling notes, and on one level it's not exactly clear where they're going to start and stop. It sounds like it could just keep going on and on this way, but of course it doesn't. It does kind of start and restop, but with the hands combined together, there's this metrical confusion of where the strong beats are, which hand is continuing, when it's going to stop, when it's going to start over. And especially this moment where they're playing together in parallel six, this way, and again, sounds like it could just keep going like that. But at this one moment, the right hand continues as it's going, and the left hand breaks off and starts over. It's a really great effect. Here. So going back, playing it all in context. Now it's like we're starting over, only in a new key, and the left hand starts instead of the right hand, but the same music is from the beginning. Ooh, but that's this unexpected surprise. This new harmony and this diminished chord. And we get new musical gestures in each hand, too. Takes us to minor for the first time in the piece. That's this disorienting harmony again, diminished. And now the general mood here is this disorientation. We're being turned around, taken far away from the home key, F major. Even in this very short piece, it's like a little journey away from home, away from the carefree, bouncy character of the beginning. And there are a couple of really cool things that emphasize that in the section that help achieve that effect. So one thing that's really common for Bach that happens on a mini scale here is how, even moving us farther away from the home key, we have like these glimpses, or this one glimpse in this case, this glimpse home, like we could just take a different turn and we'd be right back where we started, but it's very fleeting and on the way to somewhere more dark. So let me show you what I mean. So it's this harmony here that could take us right back. Like that, but instead we get something that moves us even farther away. So it's like we're taking a longer and maybe more difficult journey back to our home base, F major. Now, like I said before, the measures, the metrical units in this piece have three beats, and then on a higher level, the measures themselves, the groups of three beats, come in these perceptual groups of two, at least most of the time. So whether you're consciously aware of it or not, you're hearing them in these groups this way. So going back to where I was starting before, so one, two, then here there's going to be a change. And of course, when you're listening, you only, or you know, on some unconscious level, you only can recognize it in retrospect. One, two, three. One, two, three. And then we're back to groups of two. And so it's kind of subtle, something that you probably don't, well, you probably don't realize it when you're listening, but it contributes to this feeling of disorientation. And by the way, in the midst of this, I hope you noticed some of these shout outs to the beginning of the piece in the left hand here, just like at the beginning in the right hand, only flipped upside down. And then in the next two measures in the right hand, is the same thing as the left hand, but with this very subtle change, this leap up at the end, instead of, which makes a nice effect. And now at this point, we're back to music that we recognize from the beginning, only lower, and it's basically taking us back to our home key instead of leading us away. That's the end. Let's hear the very beginning now, just maybe the first 10 or 20 seconds from three different pianists before we hear this piece again through at the end, now that you know it so well. So first, my childhood obsession, or really my life obsession, Glenn Gould. And the striking thing you'll notice here is what makes so many people either, I guess, love or really hate Glenn Gould's playing, and that is the way he plays these fast notes, extremely short and very articulated. So instead of a smooth, you'll hear, only it'll sound a lot better than that. So because on the piano, every time you play a note, a hammer is literally hitting a string, there's this natural percussiveness, natural articulation to the sound. So a more traditional approach is to play that smoother way and make for a more vocal quality of the sound, try to hide this percussive nature of the piano. So we're going to hear that from our next pianist, who made a splash a few years ago by releasing this recording, the Goldberg Variations. And you'll hear she not only plays the 16 notes more smoothly, but also takes this character to his extreme in terms of the speed. That pianist, by the way, her name is Simone Dinnerstein, I forgot to mention. And though I don't have really strong feelings about her playing either way, it does kind of annoy me that the piano she's playing does not seem to be perfectly in tune. And that's true on her famous Goldberg Variations recording, too. And, you know, you're not always going to hear the most in-tune performances here, perhaps, on the Music Post, but we have a very limited budget when you add up sponsorships, contributions, comes to, right now, a total of zero. And yet, I find that I still seem to be able to come across a piano that's as in tune as Simone Dinnerstein's every week, so I don't know what's up with that. Anyway, our last pianist for today, another very highly regarded Bach player, Andras Schiff. And if I could boil down the difference between Schiff and Gould's playing, whereas I would say Gould is all about clarity, Schiff is more about elegance and charm, and I think you'll hear that in the beginning here. It, three contrasting styles of playing Bach on the piano. And so let's now enjoy all the way through from Glenn Gould. So, you know, I hope you didn't hate his style. He plays with these very short staccato notes, like I said, that's very characteristic of the way he plays. But at the same time, it's really much more than that, although his detractors would probably try to argue otherwise. But he's really created this manner of playing the piano that's different from anything I've ever heard and instantly recognizable as his own. And that's really difficult to do on the piano because there's just not that much that you can vary in a piano sound. But there's the force with which the hammer hits the string, and then there's how long you hold onto the note, and there's not much else. So somehow within that, he managed to create this mysterious technique, combining the sounds so that what we end up with is his unique style. And you know, love it or hate it, I hope you can at least appreciate that. Of course, you'll probably have to listen more to really hear that. And I've heard this recording 1,000 times, like I said, but it really never gets old for me. And you'll hear later on in the playing that he does play with some longer notes, you know, this way instead of all very short. But he keeps all the faster notes very short, like I described earlier. So I hope you do enjoy this, and I hope whoever you liked the most, you'll find out more about them and maybe listen more to whoever that may be. Here it is one more time, the Bach 2-part invention number 8 in F major. Part invention number 8 in F major. And you know, I had this grand plan for today to play and talk about three of these inventions, but as usual, I've talked way too much about the first one I chose, and I'm running a bit short on time, so I'll just leave you today with my playing the other two, and then next time we'll compare with some other pianists and learn more about these pieces. Like all the inventions, they are full of just brilliance is in similar and different ways to the one you just heard. And the second one that you're about to hear is actually in 3 parts instead of 2 parts, so an order of magnitude more complex, more difficult. So here they are, the 2- and 3-part inventions in C major. And so that I can leave you with the music ringing in your ears, I'll say my piece for the end here. Thanks so much for listening. You can email me with comments at samueljpost@gmail.com or themusicpostpodcast@gmail.com. You can find links to all the music and pianists you heard today on the website, www.samueljpost.com/podcast. And I hope you'll join me next time.